Call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Wednesday, March 18th. The first item is approval of the minutes. If you would, members would review the minutes and indicate if there are any corrections to be made. Senator Thompson?
I'll move acceptance of the minutes, Madam Chair.
Senator Thompson moves acceptance approval of the minutes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved as presented. First bill on the agenda is Senate File 1409. Senator Hoffman, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. And this is my first time in front of taxes, and I did not bring the donut, so I will make sure I make that right next time I come. Well, I'm getting a, Madam Chair, no members, seriously, thank you. Senate File 1409, Key Sales Tax Exemptions for Restaurants. Thank you for this opportunity. With me at the table today are Dave Sinsabaugh, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Crave, and then Dan McElroy, who is the Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. Madam Chair, I'm just going to take a few overview points and then turn the presentation over to the testifiers. Senate File 1409 represents the key sales tax exemptions for restaurant capital equipment, complimentary guest drinks, and free employee meals would be an important help to Minnesota's restaurants as they struggle to manage the rising costs they face in today's business climate. There's 3 points, Madam Chair. Minnesota state law presently allows manufacturing companies to purchase tax-free the equipment used to manufacture products that are later resold and taxed at the point of sale. Restaurant manufacturers meals, which are then sold to the consumer and taxed. The elimination of sales tax on restaurant equipment would provide a much-needed break for restaurants, drive the purchase of major kitchen items such as walk-in coolers and ovens, and result in an economic benefit in the state. Number 2 is an effort to show appreciation for patronage. As a hospitality industry standard, it is occasionally to give a free drink to a loyal customer or end of your shift. Currently, restaurateurs are required to pay a tax on each of those items, and whether a customer was charged or the restaurant paid. As such, also, Minnesota restaurants are presently required to pay sales tax on free or reduced meals to the employees. Free or reduced priced meals are a strong benefit that restaurants can provide their employees, and eliminating the sales tax would serve a strong incentive to provide these meals to employees while reducing the incurred expense. With that, now I'll turn it over to Mr. Sinsabaugh.
Excuse me. Welcome to the committee. Pronounce your last name for me.
Sinsabaugh.
Sinsabaugh. We welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you today. Senator Hoffman stated it well. It's restaurants are engaged in manufacturing food and beverage for service to our guests, and we feel it makes sense for the equipment that we purchase to do the manufacture be tax exempt. In an average restaurant opening for us, we spend between $500,000 and $1 million on capital equipment. And certainly the tax burden on that is significant. And when we're opening, 3 to 4 restaurants a year, that's a significant burden. And that honestly is, money that we could use to upgrade current equipment in our older restaurants. One of the things we're doing is upgrading a lot of our equipment to energy efficient equipment. And the ability to take those dollars and apply them to upgrading equipment instead of paying sales tax on manufacturing equipment would benefit us greatly. We believe that, again, we manufacture a taxable product that we then serve to our guests, collect the tax on, and remit to the state. So we view it as manufacturing and feel that should be changed. Additionally, when it comes to providing complimentary food or drinks to our guests, it's a common practice in the industry. It's something we do to provide a reward to loyal regular guests, to provide incentive for guests to come back. And it doesn't make sense that when we're doing that to build our business and, again, grow our tax base, that we have to pay tax on that item we're giving away. Finally, to the employee meal benefit, it's a great benefit that we're able to offer our staff. And, one of the things about working in restaurants is you're working through the time when most people eat. So for us to be able to provide a free or reduced meal to our staff at the end of their shift so they can eat something is a great benefit to them. And it doesn't seem to make sense that we have to pay tax on what we give to them. In addition, just, you know, during the shift, we provide benefits for our staff on their days off to come in. We provide free meals for our managers on their days off to come in with their family. And, again, to have to pay tax on those creates a burden on us. And, again, an ever-tightening economy for restaurants with a lot of costs, you know, wages, commodities, costs rising. It's not a profitable business. It's not a highly profitable business. Restaurants operate on slim margins, less than 5% total ROI on a national average. And when we get squeezed by these things, it makes it more difficult to expand. As a company that's grown dramatically in the state over the last 5 years, 6 years, we've grown from a $5 million company to a $60 million company. That's provided a lot of sales tax revenue for the state. And, you know, we would appreciate the support and being able to continue to grow. We have up to 4 restaurants planned in the next 15 months in the state of Minnesota and would like to be able to do all those. And certainly
are those locations public?
Not yet.
Okay.
Soon.
We'll wait.
There will be a press release probably within a week on 2 of them. But, you know, when we go to other states, there's certainly a more friendly environment. We operate in 6 different states across the country, and We love Minnesota. That's why we live here. That's where we want to really grow our company, and we are looking for the opportunity to do that in consideration of what we think ultimately are fairly common sense changes to tax code.
Mr. Sensenbaugh, in the other states that you operate in, is there that have a sales tax, do they impose it on your equipment purchases? Do you know?
No, they do not.
They do not?
I would have to double check. Some do and some don't.
Okay, Senator Hoffman, could you find out that information for us from Mr. Sensenbaugh and let me know? I'd appreciate knowing.
Madam Chair, absolutely. I will follow up and get that to you as
soon
as
thank
I can.
You. Mr. McElroy?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. To that point, I'll ask
or
the
unless,
national.
Did you have anything further?
No, thank you for your time.
We'll save questions then for you afterwards. Mr. McElroy?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. To the point that was just made, Madam Chair, I'll inquire of the National Restaurant Association. I think I can get a table of all the states.
Okay.
There are some others. We're not alone, but it's a minority. It's a smaller number. Speaking to the tax policy, first of all, I'd like to make clear that our smallest member, the Chickadee Cottage Cafe in Lake City, called me. She needs to buy new equipment. It's tight on her budget. This change would be beneficial to all of our members of all sizes, and they all think it's important. I went back to try and get some history as to how we got to a point where the only one category of manufacturers in food service is treated this way, and it goes back to the early 1980s. There was a lawsuit that went to tax court where the plaintiff was Lian Chin Incorporated, arguing they should be eligible for that treatment, and they won. In the following legislative session, we had a significant discount or a deficit. This was in the early 1980s, and I'm sorry I couldn't find if it's 81 or 82, but it's back in that time frame. And the legislature had to find money, and it was on a purely fiscal basis that food service equipment for restaurants, bakeries, grocery store, delis, people that serve ready-to-eat food to the public was taken out. So it would be consistent tax policy to do this, and we believe passionately in that. I've looked at the fiscal note. I know it is a moderately conservative or a significant fiscal note. But we think it pays a return on investment in making it easier for my members to grow, to add locations, to add more energy-efficient equipment. To make it work fiscally, it needed to be phased in. We certainly think that is something that is workable. We've been talking to the Department of Revenue about some definitional issues. They would like it. We need to continue to work with them on the definition of serving and some other terms, but we think that's very, very doable. So we're excited about this bill. I've been at the association 5 years. We brought it forward in all of those 5 years. This is the first time that there has been likelihood that there could be targets that might make it possible to fix some of these things. With that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. I have some comments, but are there any other people that would like to ask a question or make a comment? Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really kind of like this bill. I think we should encourage people to invest in their businesses and expand. The only caveat I have is that on 4.13, where it includes alcoholic beverages, we already collect $4.5 billion short of the cost of alcohol in the state. And I see it's only $500,000, but eliminating the liquor gross receipts tax is unacceptable to me. I've been trying to raise that tax for a number of years. It costs the state of Minnesota $5 billion a year, and we take in less than $400 million in taxes on alcohol. And I just think that's irresponsible. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the deletion of and alcoholic beverages on 4.13.
We have an amendment in front of us, and in discussion of that amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman, and before you respond, Mr. McElroy, we have something here we call a Gazelka question, and that is you have two parts to this bill. One is the food and drink offered without tax to customers and employees, and the other is the sales tax exemption on equipment. I dare say, without being too presumptuous, that you favor the equipment exemption before you favor the food and beverage exemption. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair, members, I believe that would be a correct assumption.
Mr. Sensenbaum, speaking for your business.
We use terminology priorities, and the equipment is a higher priority.
Yes, yes, I understand. It's not necessarily an either or, but what's the higher priority?
Madam Chair, the equipment.
And we certainly can act on your amendment, but for me, going forward, I would not support any of the complimentary meals and drinks or the liquor gross receipts tax, which altogether ends up being over $1 million. But I think from the revenue estimate, I don't know, Mr. Sensenbaum,
yes,
if you have it in front of you, but like Senator Eaton, I'm really interested in really understanding the and appreciating that in the restaurant business, this is not like me going to Best Buy and buying a refrigerator. It's not like that. That this is tremendous investment that's made, and to my mind, it does meet the definition of capital equipment because it's not something you can just go in and move around. I guess you can find a way to remove it, but it is permanently installed equipment, or meant to be permanently installed equipment, and I am very interested in seeing whether we can do something in this area. But I will not support any of the other parts of it. We can act on Senator Eaton's motion, but in my mind, I take out all of it in terms of consideration for the omnibus bill. But I can't make a motion on my own. Senator Eaton, do you have any comment further?
Madam Chair, I'd like to amend my motion to deleting Section 2 on 410 through 414, or actually 416.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton, just a second. Senator Eaton modifies her motion to amend by deleting Section 2. Just Section 2? We can start with that. That's the motion. Section 2. Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, I oppose that amendment. We're in the subcommittee here, tax reform, and you know, we commonly lay things over and talk about it.
I understand
that. And you know, at the end of the day, if it's about abuse of alcohol, I'm in total agreement. I think people that have a problem, that's one issue. But I've got to believe that if an employee transfer is buying them a glass of wine and or whatever, that they're not going to give them three bottles of wine. So I don't think it really correlates to the intent. Even though I agree with you, Senator Eaton, on where it's abuse that's a problem, I don't think this fits that category.
Senator Gazelka, I, again, although I share yours and Senator Eaton's attitudes toward alcohol abuse, and I think we probably all do, I think for me it's wider than that. It's not about alcohol. I mean, it would, a Diet Coke's the same thing in this amendment. And that, for me, with regard to whether we should excuse sales tax. So I'm going to support the amendment, but I also think we need to go, we need not to have it in there at all. Senator Skoy, do you have an opinion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to take a little different tact at the beverage component of this bill. I mean, I'm listening to the argument they're making with regard to manufacturing the meal. And perhaps I can be brought along that there's some production mechanism in manufacturing the meal. But when I go into the restaurant and there's the line of coolers and it's full of beverage bottles and the server is taking a beverage bottle out of the cooler and serving it, I don't get the manufacture component of that. And so I'm taking a little different tact on the beverage. I'll vote however I vote on Senator Eaton's amendment. If it was my decision, I'd delete both 2 and 3, but that's a further discussion. I'm tending to think we kind of like to lay these things over for further conversation, and I'm willing to do either way.
Yep. So, Senator Hoffman, you see our dilemma here. Senator
Chair.
Thompson, it is extremely unusual for this division to debate or discuss an amendment offered by a member here rather than the amendment offered by the author of the bill. It's unusual, but it's not unheard of, and of course it's not against the rules. Senator Thompson has a comment, but Senator Hoffman, would you like to speak first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did talk to the Department of Revenue this morning, 7 o'clock this morning, driving in from that 30-mile trip.
Hands-free, I hope.
Hands-free. It was Bluetooth, absolutely.
Okay.
Both hands on the
ear.
Wheel, Senator Est. I hear you loud and clear. We did talk this morning about definitions, but also regarding these points that you're bringing up. And I would like the committee to consider, allow the Department of Revenue to work with Mr. McElroy to come up with some changes, some language definitions, so that, as Senator Gazelka is saying, possible inclusion means let's fix it down the road, get to the possible inclusion, and if things are fixed and satisfactory to the committee, then so be it. If not, then you have your opportunity at that time to remove certain things and items and language. So I would ask for that favor to heed what Senator Gazelka is saying, and let's let the process work itself through to the end. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't abide by your standards, and Senator, Madam Chair, I will quote you on the floor saying, "You're right by me, Hoffman. I'm the one that this is going through." So that's just my. I would like to see that happen, if at all possible.
I understand.
Thank you.
Mr. McElroy.
And Madam Chair and members, as I understand it, and it has been in a discussion with revenue, the exemption here is for the general sales tax and not the alcohol gross receipts tax. Oh, so that would continue to be due.
And that's right.
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair and members, the exemption would include the liquor gross receipts tax. It's listed on the third line of the revenue estimate.
Ms. Pollack, is that in the language of 412 to 414 and 419, 421 for that matter? Where's the reference?
Madam Chair, there's not a reference in the bill, but alcoholic beverages, the reference on line 4.13 are subject to the liquor gross receipts tax.
So, Mr. McElroy, it is in there.
So
Thank you. Further discussion on the Eaton Amendment? Senator Thompson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my perspective on this thing is I think the connection to alcohol abuse is tenuous at best. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, I will oppose the amendment. This is something that, you know, these are the kinds of folks that we would like to see get some little perk from work and freebie given out every now and then. And I think to facilitate that for these folks, if the entrepreneurs are willing to do it, I think is a very small price to pay and makes sense. And frankly, you know, makes a situation more appealing for the very people I think that, you know, can benefit from this kind of thing. So I'll oppose the amendment. I think it makes sense.
Senator Eaton, a final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to reiterate that I don't think this bill will cause abuse of alcohol. I think the issue is the loss in receipts from the liquor gross receipts tax is the issue. We already don't collect enough money from liquor as it is to cover the cost to the state. So that is my concern. And for supporting the employee food and drink, it's been my experience, having been a server at one time, that a lot of times, sometimes the orders get wrong or the customer changes their mind or whatever, and there's meals that the employees are allowed to eat or drinks that are made incorrectly. And I have no problem with that being shared with the employees if the employer so chooses to.
Okay. Good discussion. Mr. Sensenbaum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of points.
I will go back to Senator Eaton because the maker of the amendment has the final voice.
Absolutely.
Mr. Sensenbaum.
A couple of thoughts. First, to Senator Scho's point about the cooler where you keep a bottle. That's not, to me, manufactured equipment.
Okay, we're not on that part of it. We'll come back to your comments about the capital equipment thing. Let's vote on this amendment. All in favor of the Eaton amendment as modified, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
All right, I guess.
1, 2, 3, 4. All those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now back to the bill. Mr. Sensenbaum, calling you to make some comment about Senator Scoy's observations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was saying, to me, a cooler where you keep a bottle of soda that you go and grab and take out is not manufacturing equipment. That's not the primary purchasing that we do to build a restaurant. It's permanent equipment. It's ovens and ranges and walk-in coolers. And I think that's where Mr. McElroy is working with the Revenue Department on definitions. We want it to make sense, you know, but we do believe that the equipment that we use for the manufacturer, turning a raw product into a servable product to our guests that we collect revenue on and sales tax on, should be exempt from sales tax.
So it's not like the beverage cooler down in the Rathskeller.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not where they put the sandwiches or something.
Grab-and-go type of equipment is not manufacturing equipment.
Right. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, by understanding, we'll have to work with the definitions of what's going on here. And my knowledge of refrigeration equipment is dangerously thin, so I don't want to step too far out on it. But aren't a lot of the cooling units up on the roof, and then the coolant is down through to the refrigeration display areas? Isn't that how that works?
Mr. Sensenbaum or Mr. McElroy or Senator Hoffman either?
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, walk-in coolers and freezers may have compressors on the roof, larger, used, and we believe those probably do qualify as manufacturing. They're essential to the inventory being safe to manufacture. What the industry calls reach-in coolers, which are what you describe where you'd grab a bottle of beer, probably have, in fact, I can't think of an example where they don't have a compressor right there and they're separate. Now, restaurant equipment has to have a National Science Foundation certification that it's a commercial standard, and they're quite expensive. A four-door reach-in refrigerator is $68,000. It's not the kind of refrigerator you put at home. But that's the answer about the centralized. We'll have central mechanicals for walk-ins and local in-equipment mechanicals for reach-ins.
And so, Madam Chair, when I'm looking at page 1, line 18 and 19, and they're talking about furnishing and then section 297, is that definition somewhere identified, or how are we going to parse that out?
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, that's the discussion that Mr. Cummings has asked us to have, or a part of the discussion. We will. I'm suggesting that we will have the word manufacturing or preparing in there in that final definition. But we'll need in the next few days to work out a clearer definition. Mm-hmm. And we're very prepared to do that.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just make one final comment on that. I mean, I've heard some interest from the chair and others on the committee about this, so we'll have some further review. I mean, I think the industry's been pretty strong, you know, and this is kind of like retail, and some of your audience is somewhat captive. I mean, they will travel somewhat of a distance, but, you know, if you're in St. Cloud, I mean, you're going to go to a restaurant probably in St. Cloud. So I think we need to think about that component of what we're doing with this exemption, and I also understand that, you know, you've got a good, strong, vibrant industry. Part of that is related to the component of the population that you're located in, and, you know, we want to be aware of all of our impacts on that. So I'm just talking about the fiscal ramifications down the road. But this is interesting, so, you know, we'll see some further conversations would be my guess. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Hoffman, we will ask for a comment from Mr. Cummings as well, but as you are working on modifying this, I would ask you, with definitions and so forth, that you ask for a continued review of the revenue estimate. Ms. Pollack, did you have some information for us?
Madam Chair and members, yes, just that the reference on 1.18 to 297A.61, that's the definition of prepared food. And it seems, and maybe Mr. Cummings can correct me if he speaks about this, but it seems that the exemption here on 1.17 to 1.19 would only be the machinery and equipment used in the furnishing, preparing, or serving of prepared foods. And so my reading of this is that a cooler that just stores beverages would probably not be included under this exemption.
Grab and go kind of thing.
Correct, yeah. Madam Chair.
So that would be a consideration to bring up to the revenue as well. Mr. Cummings? Mr. Cummings, if you'd identify yourself, please move forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Thank you for the opportunity to be a resource. First, I just wanted to just briefly mention some of the definitional issues that have been brought up to me as this bill has been brought forward. I know one of the things that we're thinking about is, you know, what is a restaurant? You know, there is a definition for restaurant in here, but is that the definition in which this committee would like to think about or move forward? It is inclusive of some things and excludes other things. Also, you know, Ms. Pollack just brought up the difference here between what is possibly a meal and what is possibly prepared foods. There is not a definition in here as it relates to meals. There is a definition, obviously, of prepared foods. So then we would have to go and start to define what types of things would be inclusive in the exemption. You know, as Senator Scoy was trying to think about, what types of things are in or out? Is a dishwasher, is that something that would be a part of capital equipment, or would it be more like a fryer or something? So that would have to be something to think about. I know that in terms of, you know, if you think about what is the purpose of the capital equipment exemption, is it to pull manufacturing into the state? You know, so that's – and how does that policy mesh with that? Madam Chair, before I end, I wanted to just bring up one other thing for the committee to think about. To validate the amount of tax paid by most bars, we verify that through audit, the purchases of liquor, and then assess use tax based on the bar's liquor sales minus the spillage and breakage, and allowing for giveaways in which the use tax is assessed. This would create some sort of could create some confusion. There would need to be some standards so that there wouldn't be just a time to say, oh, that's all giveaways, if there was a difference in the amount of liquor that was assessed there. It would be very difficult for us to verify the amounts used for giveaways and the amount that is just generally untaxed. However, since the bill as written does not exempt, well, the gross receipts tax, and I think Ms. Pollack spoke to that, something that we're concerned, and maybe it's just some greater definition, is whether the gross receipts tax then would be applied and then the sales tax would not. But it sounds like Ms. Pollack talked about that, but that was something that was brought up to me internally. Otherwise, Madam Chair, we look forward to working with the author and the advocates if this is something that the committee desires to be moved forward.
Mr. Cummings, I would suggest you spend more time working on the capital equipment than you do on the meals. further discussion on Senate File 1409? Well, thank you very much, Senator Hoffman. Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 1409, as amended, be laid over for consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator 1221, Senator Rosen.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's very nice to be in front of your committee, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen, you're going to have to use your outside voice in this room and also pull the mic closer.
Pull it up a little further. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
The acoustics are not very good.
Well, it's very nice to be in front of your committee, probably the one and only time this year. But I'm here to talk about the sales tax exemption for nonprofit animal shelters. There's approximately in the state 220 registered nonprofit shelters that have been registered with the IRS. And this bill would basically provide a sales tax exemption for most purchases and most sales by nonprofit animal shelters. On the bill, on page 1, line 12, it lists the purchases that would include, such as activities of rescuing, sheltering, and finding homes for unwanted animals. And then the exemptions would start on page 1, line 14. And then the sales that would be exempt the exemptions on page 1, line 14 are the ones that are not exempted. And then the sales would be of unwanted animals, animals supplies, equipment, fundraising purposes. And then the details of the fundraising would basically mean that it does not exceed fundraising 24 days per year. And it would be conducted on the premises leased for more than 5 days and less than 30 days. So with that, as you know, members, animal shelters are run by volunteers. They still have to pay their utilities. They still have to get their animals neutered, and they have to give them shots. Basically, this bill eliminates the sales tax on purchases and the supplies and equipment and fundraising supplies for their sales, and so we can provide more assistance to these unwanted animals. And Madam Chair, I have no testifiers.
Okay.
These are run by volunteers, and And the House had one person from Watonwan County, and she's a volunteer.
No, I understand. We're going to have some questions for you and also some questions for the department. Mr. Cummings, if you'd come forward. These organizations are organized under 501c3.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
We've had another bill, it's mine, as a matter of fact, that was asking for an exemption for athletic facilities that train Olympic athletes. Right now, they are their purchases are exempt to the extent that the facilities train youth, but nobody over 18. So the Lindsey Vonn's facility, even though it's a 501c3, the facility that trains her would not be exempt. So after the discussion of that bill, we had a presentation from the department that would equate, because it's not right now, if you're a 501c3, both for property taxes and income taxes, no, not for property taxes, for income taxes, that we would assume, we would assert that you could be a 501c3 with exemptions, that all 501c3s would be treated equally under income taxes and under sales taxes. And so wouldn't, if we took that proposal up, my question to Mr. Cummings is, would this bill be necessary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill that I think you're referring to, Madam Chair, that you dealt with the youth sports.
And I don't know that we introduced, Mr. Cummings, excuse me for interrupting. I don't know that we actually introduced the wider bill. We just
introduced.
Oh, it is introduced. Oh, yeah. Good. So the wider bill, not my bill, the wider bill.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, yes, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. In terms of the, if the wider bill, which would exempt purchases by all nonprofits as defined in 501c3 for the purposes of sales tax, this bill would still have standing before this committee. Okay. That bill was limited to purchases by nonprofits, and from what I remember, purchases by nonprofits, if they are animal shelters, would be exempt. If they are, even if they are not organized, or, I mean, they already do have a charitable purpose in many cases, and so they are already covered in terms of the purchases by nonprofits. What I think what Senator Rosen's bill goes beyond that. She also exempts fundraising sales made by an animal shelter, and then it also exempts the purchase price of the dog or cat or whatever is being sold. I think they would call it an adoption fee,
so,
or an adoption.
Is it the fact that current law already covers some of their purchases because they're a 501c3 and what they're, and that wider bill, I think, which is also mine, would not grant them any additional exemptions, any exemptions additional to the ones they already have. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, it's not that they would be covered under, for sales tax purposes, it's not that they would be covered under 501c3, which is what your bill is seeking to do. It would be because they're already covered under what our definition of what an exempt entity would be.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're covered for those things under current law, not my
for
bill.
For purchases by nonprofits.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, it's not as straightforward a law, Senator Rosen, with regard to purchases by nonprofits, as we would like to sometimes think that once you achieve a particular status, then you use that sales tax exemption for any and everything. And of course, we definitely don't want to get into the weeds on purchases or activities that are unrelated to the business or the charitable purpose of the, that are unrelated to the charitable purpose of the of the activity, and I always use the example of the hospital that runs a coffee shop. Right. That coffee shops operate as a hopefully for-profit operation within the hospital, and it's not related to its charitable purpose, and so it's not exempt for any taxes, including unrelated business income. So it's kind of a thorny area. So just to let you know that it comes into that kind of mix, and unrelated to the policy is unrelated to the cost on the revenue estimate, which I assume you have. Is that correct?
Right.
You have a copy of it?
I do have a copy, Manager.
It's not the additional tax relief here that we're looking at. It would be, you know, what's the best policy in dealing with these requests for additional right. exemptions. Okay?
Madam Chair, and I apologize. I didn't explain this as well as I should have or as my notes said, but the exemptions, as you were talking about the hospital and the mm-hmm. coffee shop, but the exemptions that are not covered, that do not apply, it starts on page 1, line 14, building, construction, materials, lodging, leasing of motor vehicle. I do think it's important, though, to have an exemption for the sale of these animals, because if anybody's adopted an animal, which I just did this summer, and she's wonderful, it's getting quite pricey to adopt an animal. But they have to recoup their costs, and that's because they have to have them spayed and neutered and cared for, and you have to have those type of veterinarians and people on board to do that. So I think the sales, the volunteering and the fundraising and whatever they do to just kind of cripple along is really important for these nonprofits, nonprofit shelters, and I would hate to see some of them close. They are limping along in my district. I know that for certain. And I'm sure many out in greater Minnesota are limping along.
And, you know, Senator Rosen, we dealt with these animal shelters last year, I believe,
right.
with your support and advocacy with regard to retroactive application of sales tax. And again, I don't have any amendments for you to consider, but I do think that there's probably more sympathy or empathy for paragraph A and paragraph B, which says what would not be exempt, and paragraph C, but not so much for paragraph D.
D.
The fundraising activities, but probably not so much there. Although we have considered exemptions for 501c3s, like the 4-H clubs that go to a state, a county fair. They can exempt what they're doing there. Used to be for 5 days, but a lot of county fairs were run for a week, and so we're considering extending that by another 2 days. So there, it's not that it doesn't happen, but it probably not as much sympathy for that exemption than it would be for the actual expenses of the adoptions. Any other comments from members? Senator Dietzick and then Senator Skoy.
This might be more for revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rosen, for bringing us this bill. So if a city or local government runs a shelter, I don't know if they are already exempt in these purchases or not. So just asking.
We are informed by council that they are exempt under the
okay.
local government exemption.
Cool. That's all I have.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rosen, when you're contemplating these, there's three different provisions here, I guess. Which one has the most impact on the shelter? Would it be the sale of the animal? I mean, the fundraising would, in my mind, be relatively small amount of what your bill is.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, that's a good question. I think the fundraising is rather small. They do it a lot, and I think they rely heavily on donations, but probably the sale of the animal, which I would like to be able to they have to keep it low enough so you have people that come in. Mm-hmm. I have heard people that just can't afford to adopt an animal, and that's a shame because mm-hmm. there's a lot of animals out there that need to be adopted, so I would assume it's the purchase.
Yeah, that I'm just trying to kind of run through as I listen to what's being proposed, trying to think about what would be the cleanest to do. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that would be pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Exempt the sale of the animal and not get into supplies and all of that stuff. Online.
On 2.1?
2.1. But I was just asking if she knew. You know, I'm looking at the revenue estimates, relatively small. You know, so where in here is the most of the impact? And that would have been my speculation, but I was wondering if you knew.
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, if I had to make a choice, I guess it would be on the purchases. But
well, we'll have further conversation. We're not going to make a decision today, but maybe if you have some, we'll have further conversations about that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Probably, again, not so interested in the fundraising parts of it.
Not
so much interested in paragraph D. Okay, if you want to work on the other two.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to add that I'm pretty uncomfortable with 1.21 to 1.24. I see that as an area that organizations I've been acquainted with that's real easy to abuse and hard to.
They would not be included. If you go back to 1.13, they specifically say that the exemption proposed would not apply to lodging.
Okay.
Construction materials.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
When we're reading through this, we're saying, wow, that's a big exemption. But then you have to go back to 1.13.
Thank you.
And I think that Senator Rosen was trying to get us back off of that. Right.
I did, Madam Chair. I did a poor job coming
out
of the chute there.
You did fine. any further discussion of Senate File 1221? Seeing none, Senator Spoonen moves that. Oh, there is a further discussion. If you'd like to come forward, please. And if there's anyone else that would like to testify on the bill, if you would let us know. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm from Brooklyn Center. And,
Ms.
Madam
O'Connor.
Chair, I did want to testify on the first bill, but my testimony concerns several of your bills, so I can do it now. It also
Ms. O'Connor,
this bill.
Is your testimony, if your testimony is about this bill, we will receive it. The other bill was already acted on, and I apologize for not asking for additional testimony, but we're not going to return to that bill. So please limit your testimony to Senator Rosen's bill, Senate File 1221.
More sales tax exemptions. Some businesses have to pay sales taxes. Others are exempted. Taxes should be fair. Why not eliminate sales and use taxes for everyone? This is supposed to be the Tax Reform Committee, but in the past 2 weeks, most of your bills have been tax exemptions and tax credits. This makes taxes more complicated and more unfair. As the Tax Reform Committee, have you read the tax rules? There are 1,994 IRS tax forms and publications and about 50 Minnesota Department of Revenue tax forms and publications. Have you read them? Tax rules are not only complicated and unfair, they are abusive. Citizens are being abused by their government. I have a handout of tax reforms for income tax, corporate tax, and property tax. Taxes should be fair and simple. Instead, they are abusive. I challenge you to prepare a complicated tax return by yourself. You will see how complicated and frustrating and abusive it is. Then, as the Tax Reform Committee, you can end the abuse.
Thank you very much.
This is my handout. It needs to be copied for you.
If you would give that to the page, we'll see that members get copies. Thank you very much, Ms. O'Connor. Further discussion of Senate File 1221. Seeing none, Senator Coonan moves that Senate File 1221 be laid over for further consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
The next bill is... Oh, it's Senator Coonan. File 289 and Senate File 1186. We have both listed there. Senator Coonan, which one would you like to do first?
289.
Direct members' attention to Senate File 289. Senator Coonan.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 289 is a bill that provides an exemption for sales and use tax for propane tanks, and that's for those that have a capacity of 100 gallons or more, and also for any of the valves or regulators necessary for the use of the tank. And this is for purchasers of the tank, not for people who lease propane tanks from suppliers or dealers. And on the bill, you can see the new language there on line 1.7 through 1.10, and then the effective date on lines 1.11 and 1.12, which is June 30th of 2015. And that's the bill, Madam Chair.
Senator Coonan, are there other what amounts to storage equipment or such that we currently exempt? Ms. Pollack, do you know?
Madam Chair, I don't know.
Senator Kuna, do you know?
I don't know either. Madam Chair, I don't know either. Won't be able to answer that.
Yeah. Hi, Madam Chair. Yeah. Patrick Murray with
would you identify yourself,
yes,
please, for the record, Mr. Murray, and then if you can enlighten us on that, I'd be interested in knowing.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Patrick Murray with Cooperative Network.
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that question. I apologize. Okay. We can try to find that out for you. But I do have some testimony I'd like to add to Senator Coonan's remarks, so if whenever you're ready, I can do that.
Okay. Senator Skoy, I'm trying to think back on the storage facilities where we had this long thing when we got to visit breweries and things like that.
Fermentation tanks.
What was the rationale for the reduction or exemption for those items?
Madam Chair.
And are they more like, is this more like the restaurants, or is this more like the brewery containers or whatever you want to call them?
I think the conversation with regard to those fermentation tanks, et cetera, where the department was determining that they were part of the building. We argued, or the advocates argued, that they were part of the process and not part of the building. And we are currently having some discussion with regard to storage tanks for fertilizers because of a pollution control exemption.
Yes.
And so we have this discussion here. And I was actually going to ask after the testimony, and maybe they can answer it in the testimony, you know, what exactly is the purpose of this bill? Because the smaller leased tanks are clearly not included, so most of the homeowners wouldn't be included. Are these really large storage tanks that so we can expand the capacity, or kind of what's the goal of this?
And if you could tell me, in addition to that, Senator Coonan or Mr. Murray, what does a 100-gallon
that's on my question
propane tank look like? Does it fill the, is it like as big as the seal on the floor there up to the ceiling, or is it smaller? What is what are we talking about here? Either Senator Coonan or Mr. Murray, we're very curious.
Madam Chair, I'll try and answer that first. I'm not familiar with tanks that small, actually, but like for my home, I have a propane furnace, and the length of the tank is probably about the length of this table or a little bit more. And then
how many gallons does it
hold? I'm sorry, that's 500 gallons. And so the 100 is pretty small, but I, quite frankly, am not familiar with that. But for a lot of homes, at least in the area where I live, a 500-gallon propane tank is very common, which is five times bigger than the minimum here, which tells me that's a pretty small tank.
Pretty small tank.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Murray, make your case.
Sure. Madam Chair, to your question regarding a 100,000-gallon facility, that would be on the commercial side or a large cooperative
100
side?
100-gallon.
100 gallons? Okay.
The bill is for 100 gallons, not 100,000 gallons.
Yes, I apologize. I thought you were getting the larger side. To Senator Coonan's point, yes, 100 gallons is on the smaller end of a residential tank. And last year when we did have this bill introduced, Senator Coonan carried it as well as Representative Anderson on the House side, and they did amend the bill to increase the size of the tank so that it wasn't quite as low, because 100 gallons is not typical on the residential side. So if you're open to changing the number, then we're certainly okay with that since it was done last year.
Just seems, I mean, I don't have any other questions. You know, I think the information is there, but again, Senator Scoy asked why.
What's the purpose?
Why for this bill?
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, the purpose is to get more propane in Minnesota. Based upon what happened with the winter of 2013, the harvest of 2013 with a record amount of propane used in Minnesota, the reversal of the Cochin pipeline, which approximately took 40% of our supply away, what we need to do is increase more capacity so that there's more propane readily available in the state. As you'll recall, there was a lot of propane dealers, cooperatives that had to send their drivers to other states during that time to get the propane. Kansas and Texas were two of the large areas. So with the reversal of the pipeline, what we would like to do is have incentives out there for folks to increase additional capacity on the residential as well as the commercial side. Currently, right now, propane supplies are in a better spot than they were a year and a half ago, but we potentially could see this problem happen again. So that's why we're looking to increase the capacity so that the risk is not borne by the cooperatives as well as the residential customers when prices were up in the $4 range.
So this is the exemption is not, in a sense, solving a problem. It is creating an incentive for more propane tanks so that people have more on hand and less likely to experience a shortage for their individual use, let's say, when there might be a shortage in the state. They would be prepared because they would have additional propane tanks. Is that a good summary?
No? Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. It's about incenting both people for personal use and for business to get more storage and then to use that storage or take delivery during the summer when pressure on the supply isn't as great, so that there would be more on hand when we get to the heavy use seasons.
Okay, I understand.
Madam Chair.
Any questions, Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Coonan, I think we'll have some additional conversations. I'm reading the revenue estimate here, and I see that there's proposed to be 30 large storage tanks purchased. Those I can see the purpose of this, but I'm a propane user. My suppliers require me to lease a tank from them. They don't want me to purchase tanks. They want me to lease from them. It's actually, they don't want to come and fill up somebody else's tank. So I think that if you're trying to address an issue where we're going to put a bunch of smaller tanks for residential use, we need to figure out how to get around that little component of this, because the leases are not included and the suppliers don't want you to be owning. They want you to be leasing from them, so they know. I mean, I think it's an assurance of them that the tank is in good shape, I mean, because they maintain it and do all of that. But, you know, if we're trying to get at the smaller users, we'd have to be a little creative in how we're going to do that, I would think.
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, you're right. The leases are pretty common. I know even for my home, my tank is leased, and so that's a pretty common. This is something, Senator Scoy, I think we need to look at some more.
Senator Coonan, last year, or when the bill was previously introduced and discussed, the capacity level was 250 gallons. Is there a particular reason you set it at 100 gallons this year, what's the best way to go here?
Madam Chair, the bill last year was introduced at the 100 gallon too, and then we amended it up to 250. And
was
I'm
it
sure
included in the omnibus bill? Do you recall? Was this provision included in the omnibus bill?
No, Madam Chair, it wasn't.
Okay,
no.
just curious, just trying to get a little history here.
Right. And the minimum size there, I don't think either of us are stuck on that. You know, what we're looking for here is capacity, and it would take a lot of small tanks to get much capacity, so I think there's room to work with that minimum number or minimum size of the tank.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Coonan moves that Senate File 289 be laid over for consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Coonan. We now have also from him Senate File 1186.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senate File 1186, what the bill does is changes the sales tax exemption for telecommunication equipment to include wire, cables, conduit, fiber, and poles. And this is items used in the transportation of telecommunications or pay television services. And if you look at the bill, you'll see the changes on page 4 at the top line, 4.4 and 4.5. And what happens here is it deletes language that excludes these items from the general capital equipment sales tax exemption. And then if you drop down to line 4.23, you'll see that at the end of that line, you'll see the changes to include the wire, cable, fiber, poles, and conduit. And then, of course, at the bottom, 4.33 and 4.34 is the effective date of June 30th of 2015. And that's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Coonan. I think its explanation is quite straightforward. It's extending the sales tax exemption that was granted in which year? We went back and we imposed it and then took it off in 2013, 2014. So this is now an extension of that. And we have some testifiers here. Who would like to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen.
Mr. Christensen.
President and CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, and we're a trade association that represents 42 broadband landline broadband providers throughout the state, what you would know as traditional telephone companies. Senator Coonan had did a great job of outlining it, so I won't rehash that. I'll keep my comments brief. MTA members use that to deploy broadband, and it's an important part of what we do in reinvesting it. One of our members, Ascentec in Houston, Minnesota, testified in the House Tax Committee that in 2014 they spent $40,000 on sales tax just for these items, and that's money that could be used to deploy broadband and reach the governor's goal of border-to-border broadband throughout Minnesota. The other point I'd like to make is that, you know, we did the $20 million in broadband grants last year that were just awarded this year, and they have to pay sales tax on these items for that. So it really is counterproductive to the $20 million that you approved to go out the door for that. So we would just ask that you would support including these, because we can't deploy broadband without it. And so with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Any questions or comments for Mr. Christensen? Then who would like to go next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic with the Minnesota High Tech Association. I also staff the chair of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, Margaret Anderson Kelleher. And unfortunately, she can't be here with us today due to a prior commitment, but you will find in your packet a letter from her in support of Senate File 1186. And I'd just like to note that the Minnesota High Tech Association and the Broadband Task Force do, in fact, support Senate File 1186. Expanding access to broadband is an important to increasing and expanding our economic competitiveness, and expanding the sales tax exemption on telecommunications equipment is a key component to helping incentivize greater deployment of broadband across the state. And with that in mind, we do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dukic. Good morning, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Mike Martin. I'm with the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. Cable companies in Minnesota. We serve over 900,000 homes in Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Coonan for bringing this issue forward. Briefly, just a couple of points. This proposal is technology neutral. It would not apply just to the telephone companies or fiber companies or wireless companies or cable companies. It would apply evenly across. Obviously, it's a broadband issue. The state has invested enormously in extending broadband throughout the state, and we see this as an incentive to that. I'd also like to point out that our services are taxable with the exception of broadband, and that the fiber that's deployed does generate a taxable product. Also, most of our companies operate in many states, and so we think that by exempting fiber in Minnesota, we give the projects that these companies put forward to their corporate offices, they give them an edge as they compete within the company for capital dollars. So appreciate your taking this issue up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Any discussion? Senator Grzelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. More of a comment. I've had the opportunity to go to a number of broadband meetings and talk to the folks in rural Minnesota in particular, and I've seen Democratic legislators there as well as Republican. And we know that for rural Minnesota to compete, the smaller the community, the bigger the deal, and the more difficult it is to get broadband out there. And so there's been a number of tools that we've been looking at to do that. And for the companies that are doing it, it's typically not a money maker to get into those farther places. And so the more we can do to help them, the faster we will get out to some of those small towns. And so I'm very passionate about this one, and thank you, Senator Coonan, for doing it, because, you know, if we don't do it, those smaller towns will not be able to compete, both in education, in medical services that they provide, and attracting small businesses. So this is just one of the tools that we'll have in the toolbox, but very passionate about this one.
Thank you, Senator Grzelka. And I know you're not alone in that. Senator Coonan, or any of the other gentlemen, which of the it is a moderately expensive item. Which of the items in 4.4 and 4.5 are the biggest cost driver? Is it the wire, the cable, the fiber, the poles, or the conduit? Which is the most?
Madam Chair, thanks for the question. I would say fiber and conduit, because you have to have conduit to put fiber in the ground, or at least most of the time you do that. The other ones really go to the more technology agnostic viewpoint that Mr. Martin spoke about. So if I had to rank them, I would say fiber and conduit would be tight because you got to have them both.
Senator Coonan, obviously the kind of thing I've been asking others as well is that, you know, what's the highest priority here? And if we were favorably disposed to doing this, could we do it, you know, some items at a time, and which ones would make the most sense and have the most impact at the least cost, but certainly just, you know, what's the most crucial? Like, just
Madam Chair.
So I appreciate that information.
The experts at the table here tell me it's fiber, that's the priority.
Fiber, yeah. Okay. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think your question was very insightful, and one of the things when I look at it is, onto your question, I mean, the wire, the cable, the poles is kind of what's not the brand new technology, the fiber would be that. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we were to focus in on bringing broadband to the state, I think focusing in on
fiber.
Components that would impact that the most.
Right. Well, then I would ask the department to, if they could, to give us an estimate on just the fiber. And it doesn't mean that the whole proposal goes away, but I just be interested in what
the conduit.
The impact of fiber and conduit would be if we could extend a sales tax exemption to them as an incentive for more broadband development. Mr. Cummings, did you hear me? Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes, of course.
I need to qualify my statement a little bit.
That's okay.
The majority of my members directionally bore or bury fiber and conduit. So that's what we have the most experience with. But you will find some parts of the state, and the Arrowhead in particular, where that's not possible. So poles would be a big deal to them. I just throw that out there.
So, Madam Chair.
We're looking for a place to start. On
yes,
this.
Ma'am.
Okay, and so, you know, it is a it's a $25 million hit, tax exemption. So we're looking for a place to start.
Well,
Senator
fiber
Skoy.
And condo would be a great place.
Yeah, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I just want to understand it's because of the rock, the shield that they can't just trench the cable in and. So they have to put poles? Is that what you're talking about?
Mr. Christensen?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, no, just because the terrain you can't bury in some of the parts of the Arrowhead, you know, just too rocky. They have to put the poles up.
Okay, further discussion? Then Senator Coonan moves that Senate File 1186 be laid over and to be considered for the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Coonan, Senator Dietzick. Senate File 1510. Okay. Senate File 1510.
Good morning, Madam Chair. We are here today to discuss some possible additional fixes to durable medical equipment and prosthetic devices. Last year, this committee included language to change the effective date of our 2013 changes, refining the definition of exempt insurance plans and including the accessories and supplies necessary for the effective use of durable medical equipment and prosthetics to make them retroactive to April 1st, 2009. That was done so that it wouldn't look like they owed taxes if there was an audit. Not all of the language made it through the conference committee, and we're here today to discuss those items. This bill aligns the definition of insurance plan with that in Section 62A, which governs insurance plans. Clarifications is necessary as more public plans are administered through managed care organizations. This bill would make this provision retroactive to April 1st, 2009, again for audit purposes. With me today is Sarah Anderson, VP Key Medical Supply, and she can help explain the bill and answer any questions.
Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Many of you have heard our testimony in years past. We represent the Minnesota Association of Medical Equipment Suppliers. We have been working for a number of years with you to fix our exemption issues relating to medical supplies and equipment. Some of the challenges that we still face, despite our successes in 2013 and 2014 to expand the definition of durable medical equipment and prosthetics to include the accessories and supplies that are necessary to make them function, and then last year to apply the retroactivity for Medicare and Medicaid purchased items. We still face challenges with accessories and supplies in that retroactive period, as that language that we added in 2013 in Subdivision 7A was not included in the retroactivity. And so we are looking for the committee to possibly include that in this year's omnibus tax bill, because we still face the same uncollectible issues we've talked about in the past. And our expansion to coverage for health plans really relates to, again, the uncollectibility that we have faced regarding the way claims are processed, the way healthcare claims are processed. When a medical supply company provides a service, we have to do so in advance of being able to bill the claim. We do not see payment from either a public program or a health plan for up to 30 to 45 days after the service is rendered. We have federal rules set out by the HIPAA, Health Insurance Portability and Privacy Act, that govern how we can submit a claim to any insurance entity, regardless of whether it's a public product or a commercial product. Those rules are often in conflict with the instructions that we find in the sales and use fact sheets in instructing us on how to apply sales tax to medical supplies, accessories, and prosthetics. So we are stuck in an uncollectible situation as providers. We have a handout that you have, some of you may have seen in the past, that has been distributed for testimony today. If you look at the graph on the handout, if you look at the graph, in a summary of claims from our members, collected from our members, over 96% of the rejections we receive from health plans, both public and private, have some type of a denial saying that a sales tax code, which is what we have to use in submitting that claim, is either included in the cost of another allowance, meaning that it is part of a different code, that it is an ineligible code for the patient, an ineligible code for the plan or the service, or it is just flat out a non-covered charge. So as businesses, we submit our sales tax code, and we have no ability to get that paid for by the health insurance. That, according to the fact sheet, is our responsibility as businesses. When we are unable to collect, then it becomes, we believe, a use tax for the individual to self-assess and report, because we, as the seller, have been unable to collect. In summary, that's that's the issue we continue to face. That's why we are here again today, looking for assistance once again from this committee and from the legislature in hopefully finally resolving our uncollectibility issues that revolve around medical supply, durable medical equipment, mobility equipment, and prosthetics. I'm happy to take any questions.
Senator Dietzick, if we adopted this, is that a violation of Streamline?
I don't believe it is in compliance with Streamline right now. I don't think it is SUSTA, if that's the terminology. I don't believe it is.
I'm going to ask Mr. Cummings.
Our owner, if I may respond.
Let me just comment there. It seems like to me that you're complaining about Streamline bringing it in. And if we go out, then that means we're, in my mind, means we're in violation of Streamline, which I will not support. Mr. Cummings.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. At this time, this bill would be in violation, or there would be issues with Streamline sales tax agreement, although it
And we have applied for exceptions.
Yes.
To I'm on the Board of Governors. We have applied for exceptions, which have been granted.
by streamline when we have peculiar or specific issues or challenges, but I want to be real clear about it.
Madam Chair, while I have not analyzed every single issue that has come up in this, I believe that many of the issues could be resolvable just by some drafting changes even before passage. So it may not even need to go if it is a desire of this committee to move in this policy direction. So depending on how we're able to craft the language, we may not even need to go to the Board of Governors for
okay.
an exception.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Chair, Chairperson Rust. Just to clarify, the owner of our organization, Key Medical Supply,
there.
Has applied.
Stay there.
Her name is Jackie Anderson, and she is on the Business Advisory Council with Streamline Sales and Use Tax, working to resolve this issue across all of the member states.
At the Streamline level.
At the Streamline level. Because really, this is faced by everybody. The HIPAA laws govern insurance claim submission across the entire United States. The definitional problem for accessories and supplies covers all necessary accessories and disposable supplies across the United States. So we are working through the SSUTA process, and I believe the next meeting in March is taking up these exact recommendations to have them become options for member states to choose within SSUTA.
Okay. Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I think Ms. Anderson answered my question because I was curious as to how the rest of the states were dealing with this, if it's with the streamlined sales tax agreement. So I think you answered that, and you're working on it. So my question.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question. Do you control what you can charge for the product? I'm guessing you can't. Because then you could build that into the product, but is that correct?
Absolutely not. We do
Ms.
not
Anderson.
Control that. We have fee schedules set by each of the payers.
Right.
Those fee schedules are, using this pen as an example, that pen may have a fee schedule of $1. One of the other problems that we face is the variability in local sales tax. So if a plan were to say that this is included in another service or charge, then they would say that sales tax is included in that. But in Minneapolis, that would be a higher percentage of the product, obviously, than in some other communities in the state. And so that is a variability problem that makes the pricing of that product out of our control and unfair.
Okay. Any further discussion or comments on Senate File 1510?
Well, Madam Chair, I gather that we're going to get some language from the department on how to resolve this without having a streamlined sales
without
tax
without issue. Having an issue even streamlined sign and obviously because we're in session and deadlines and so on, I will not be at that meeting, but the streamlined sales tax Board of Governors is not known for acting swiftly. So we would appreciate your following up on Senator Skoy's request on behalf of Senator DJ.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I will send an email to both of you and Ms. Pollack and Ms. McQuay about
and Senator DJ. And Senator DJ.
Yeah. About our observations related okay. to SSUTA.
Right. Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman. Yeah, Senator Hoffman mentioned that he was on the phone with Department of Revenue at 7 a.m. I'll let you know I was on the phone with them at about 7 p.m. last night discussing some questions that came up on this
you're
bill.
You're very
so.
Busy.
Yes.
There being no further discussion, Senator Dietzick moves that Senate File 1510 be laid over for consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Tomorrow is Thursday, and the full committee will be meeting. I'll call on you in just a second. Full committee will be meeting, and the subject area is?
Madam Chair, we're going to review the proposal for electrical generation tax
yes.
changes.
Yes, the electrical. It should be very interesting discussion, and then the division and the committee will be meeting every day next week. 8:30. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't want Ms. O'Connor's comments to go without recognition in this committee. She talked about, quote unquote, the abusive nature of the complexity of our tax system. I don't know if I'd use the word abusive, although I suspect, save for fear of heights and claustrophobia, perhaps getting the IRS or Minnesota Department of Revenue on your caller ID is the most common phobia in America or Minnesota. I would rather focus on the economic aspects of it. So I did a little research, and I've seen these numbers before. And I think it's worth our time as people who are involved in the business of setting tax policy to look at the fact that it is estimated that approximately 6.6 billion employment hours are spent in America annually calculating taxes. I would point out that that does not add one dime of productivity. It doesn't help the gentleman at Crave to lower the prices of his food or create a better product. It is simply the cost of doing business. That translates into approximately 3,173,000 people working full-time all year. So if you walk through the Mall of America, approximately one of every 39 people you run into, the equivalent of their full-time talent, treasure, and education is spent calculating taxes. So I do think that Ms. O'Connor's comments deserve highlighting. And I do think that, by the way, I come in and I, you know, support a lot of these exemptions and the things that we're doing because I got to live in the world I've got, not the world I want. But in the world I want, we wouldn't need a tax reform division. Because if we were to have an income tax, which is a bad idea, it would be write your total income here, multiply it by a percentage, send check. I prefer consumption taxes because they don't discourage productive activity. Anyway, I think we sometimes forget that. And, oh, by the way, most of us in this room file a 1040 tax form. If you have any kind of a deduction at all, you do. And approximately 1.6 billion hours a year in America is spent on 1040 forms alone, which translates to 769,000 people full-time. And again, I want to repeat, that does not increase one person's standard of living other than the tax lawyers and accountants who fill out the forms. So let's keep that in mind as a tax reform division. Thank you for allowing me my rant, Madam Chair.
Of course. So part of that conclusion is that collecting taxes is a jobs program.
Yes, it is. Unfortunately, to the expense of a lot of other people.
Are there further comments? And thank you, Senator Thompson. It's your comments, general or specific, are always welcome here. There being no further business before the committee, Senator Gazelka moves we adjourn. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Committee is adjourned.